I'm an addict named Bill. I wish you were all outside playing in the sunshine. I'm pretty nervous. When I was asked to, when I was asked if I'd be willing to speak at a workshop, I did what I always do, which is I said, sure, fine, just tell me what you need me to do. And when I got the call that they asked me to do this workshop, my first thought was, great, I should have asked them for something specific, because I didn't really think that there was much to talk about here. It was suggested to me that I focus on traditions 6 and 7, which is, those are the self-support traditions in Narcotics Anonymous. And I will talk a little bit about my personal experience with self-support, but I'm more interested in focusing on the traditions, because the traditions regarding self-support are really group-oriented, not individual-oriented. It's nice if you can apply them to your life as an individual, but the traditions are designed for groups to have guidance, more so than for individuals to have guidance. So first to talk about the sixth tradition, which if I had it up here, I could tell you exactly what it is. But that's the one: we ought never endorse financial lending the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from primary purpose or primary purpose. I think that's it. Let me see if that's it. This is a great little wallet card, by the way, if you don't have one. Yes, that's six. I actually decided that what I was going to do, rather than talk out of the side of my neck about this stuff, was I was going to do a little research. And the research that I did on this particular tradition led me back to a group that was founded over 170 years ago called the Washingtonians. And Washingtonians were founded actually in Baltimore around 1838. And they were called the Washingtonians not because they were founded in Washington, obviously. They were named after George Washington. I don't know why. But I read a fairly scholarly treatise about the Washingtonians and what they were about and how they grew and how they came to disappear. And this is what happened. These guys got together and they decided that they had to come up with a way to try to help treat drunkards. The term addict and alcoholic didn't exist back then. People were called drunkards. And they came up with this concept, which was one person sharing their experience, strength, and hope with another, which is the foundation of our recovery today. And the results were miraculous. People who are considered hopeless cases stopped drinking and started living like fruitful lives. They had no religious affiliation. They weren't anti-religion. They just didn't have an affiliation as an organization. It was all about people getting together, sharing with each other, and not using. And it worked. And it worked really, really well. It worked so well that it spread up and down the East Coast. And bear in mind that in 1840, the country didn't go much past the Mississippi. So it spread all in the existing United States. And it was very successful. And a lot of people got on the bandwagon. They thought it was a great idea. It wasn't particularly organized, but the concept really spread like wildfire. There were a couple other things that were going on in the country at the time that seemed to dovetail really nicely with this concept of getting drunks to stop drinking. One of which was temperance, something that most of us don't know too much about, I don't think, but about drinking or using responsibly. I don't know how to do that. And the other was prohibition, about trying to make alcohol illegal. What happened was, over the course of time, the people who were involved in the Washingtonians, some of them got affiliated with these other causes, and they brought those causes' agendas into the Washingtonian movement. ultimately what happened was by 1860, the Washingtonians, who had at one time hundreds of thousands of members, ceased to exist altogether. So in the course of about 22 years, they came and went. Even though the plan that they came up with was effective and it worked, and the reason they disappeared is because people didn't make a distinction between the Washingtonians and the temperance movement and the Washingtonians and prohibition. It all got lumped in together to the point where these days, if you read about the history of the temperance movement and the prohibition movement in that time, the Washingtonians are a footnote. They're not even considered a major movement. It's just a footnote. And it's because they lost their focus on their primary purpose. And that's, when I read that, I realized how important it was for us to keep focused on this whole thing about, we're here, one addict sharing their experience, strength, and hope with another, so that each one of us can stay clean for another day. That's why we do this thing. And if we start thinking that there's other stuff that we need to be doing, we really run the risk of destroying this fellowship. And as powerful as that lesson was, it turns out that when AA was founded, and I have to talk about this stuff because this is the history of how we came here. When AA was founded, with this knowledge, they still tried to reinvent the wheel. And they still wanted to do the hospitals and the job services and all this stuff that didn't have anything to do with one person helping another not used for one day. They want to do all this other stuff. And the thing is, they're well-meaning. It's all great stuff. You know, I mean, it is. I think it's great stuff, but it dilutes the focus, takes the focus away from our primary purpose. And they learned the hard way, again, that wasn't going to work. The other thing about this tradition, we're not a philanthropic organization. We don't look for worthy causes to support. We have one worthy cause to support, and that's the one we support, which is the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. My own experience with when I got here, I thought that NA was a pretty good idea. It just needed a little fine-tuning. And I was just the guy to do that. I don't think I'm alone in that, because I've been in rooms where the candidates for president of NA, there was more than one president in the room at any given time. So when I got here, I was talking about things we could do to make NA better to some people who, thank God, had some time and experience in the program. And they told me in no uncertain terms, Bill, there is no candidacy for president of NA, and if there was, you would not be a candidate. Just to let you know, if you wouldn't have the qualifications if there was such a position. And I didn't particularly like that, but I took it to heart. The flip side of this sixth tradition is the seventh tradition. And I know I'm not going to use much time here. Jeff, I'm going to leave you hanging. I'm sorry, bro, but that's the way it is. The seventh tradition is that we're fully self-supporting through our own contributions. And this is the flip side of the sixth tradition. We're not a philanthropic organization. We're also not a charity. We don't solicit support from outside organizations. Now, there are two reasons for this. The one reason is because we don't want to be beholden to other people. Again, we don't want to have to pursue some other organization's agenda, even if it's a good idea, even if it sounds like a good idea. I don't really think that would be an issue, because my experience with addicts in recovery is you really can't get us to do anything we don't want to do anyway. I mean, really, as a group, I've never seen any of us do anything that, for me, I pretty much wasn't forced to do by the pain that my disease causes me, to tell you the truth. But the other thing is, and it says, this is a really important tradition for another reason, and it doesn't get talked about too much, but it's important for us to not have too much money. Now, I'm not saying stop putting money in the basket. On the contrary, I would ask you, the next time you're thinking about buying a Starbucks, if it's a choice between a Starbucks and a buck in a basket, think about the buck in the basket. Because Narcotics Anonymous is always operating on a shoestring. We have things that we have services that we want to provide, particularly now that the fellowship is growing so much internationally. We have services we want to provide that we can't afford to provide. We have to put it off. We have to prioritize things. But it says in the seventh tradition in the basic text, we would really have it no other way. And the reason is because too much money would be a bigger problem. And I know this from personal experience on a couple of different levels. Back when I first got clean, this convention had $5,000 in a tax escrow account. And the reason it was in a tax escrow account is because the IRS had not yet decided whether or not we were a nonprofit organization. If they decided that we weren't a nonprofit organization, we were going to have to pay tax on all the stuff that gets sold at conventions. So we set aside the money in case they said, you're not nonprofit, you owe us the tax money. Battles raged for a couple of years in regional service meetings about that money. And a lot of people were at the position, it's like, screw the IRS, we've got important stuff to do with that money, we need to spend it. And then other people were saying, but if we spend it, and then the IRS says, pay us our money, we don't have the money. So this is the kind of stuff that I often call the seventh tradition the money tradition. If you want to create controversy in NA, put a dollar sign in front of whatever you're talking about, and it will automatically become controversial. Because we got, as a fellowship, we got a thing about money. I'm not exactly sure why. I got to think about money as an individual too. As far as the personal thing about self-supporting through our own contributions, I know a lot of people come in here and they have a very, they really have a really difficult time of it, just like making ends meet when they get here. I was somewhat luckier than that. I somehow, on reflection, I can't really tell you exactly how, but somehow I always was cared for. There was always somehow enough money. Not as much as I wanted, but enough. There was always enough. But I have this problem. I mistake self-support for self-sufficiency, and if you read the literature, there's a thing in the basic text that says self-sufficiency is a lie. What I think about for myself with self-support is that I'm supposed to be able to do everything myself without any help. And I have been like that since way before I started using drugs. When I was a kid, I remember, I'm going to tell the shoelace story. It's kind of a goofy story, but it really talks about who I am. When I was like 5 or 6 years old, I didn't know how to tie my shoes. But I knew what a properly tied shoe looked like. So what I used to do is I tie a knot in my shoe. And then I would spend a lot of time back threading the end of the lace through the knot so that it looked like a bow. And I thought that was good enough. And it never crossed my mind to ask anybody else for help. And as a result, probably half the time at night, my mom had to like get out like a little nail file and untie the knot in my shoe, because it wasn't a bow. It was just a knot with a couple of loops in it. That's the way I've been my whole life. I don't have whatever the wiring is that says, if you don't know, you ask for help. My wiring says, you don't know, you don't tell anybody you don't know, you figure something out, and you make it look like you know. So I run into this problem where I forget that self-sufficiency is not self-support. I don't know how to work on my car. I don't want to know how to work on my car. Don't ask me to work on your car. This would be a bad thing for you and for me. I need help in all kinds of areas. I'm not a doctor, although sometimes I act like a doctor. I diagnose myself and then I don't go see a healthcare professional. I'm not a lawyer, and thank God for some reason I don't try to practice law. I probably wouldn't be here right now if I did. And my point here is that self-support means not only that I generate like income for myself so that I can live, but that I ask for help when I don't know. And that's, even after a long time in recovery, that's still hard for me. My first assumption is I need to figure out how to do this. I don't need to ask somebody, I need to figure out. And the other thing I want to talk about is about self-support, and then I'll be done, is the whole concept of, it talks in the basic text about this is considered the money tradition. And you know, money is important, and like I said before, Narcotics Anonymous never really has enough to carry the message in as many ways as they'd like to, you know, as at the world. And even at the area and the group levels, I was looking a couple of days ago at the world budget and at contributions, and they don't have much of a prudent reserve. And most groups don't either. You know, we pretty much run on a shoestring. But it's not just about money. If you have a home group, you've probably done service in your home group on whatever level, whether you're making coffee or being a secretary or putting out chairs or something like that. Maybe you've done area service or even regional service, spoken at a workshop, secretary at a workshop, giving somebody a ride to a meeting. Service is about a lot more than putting a buck in a basket. We're having a convention here because a whole bunch of people volunteered to work their asses off to make this happen. They don't get paid for it. They're just members, just like you and me. And I know some of these people, and I've known a lot of them over the years, and it's hard work. So the next time, when somebody asked me to be of service, I was taught the answer is yes unless I have to say no, which is why I'm standing right here now, because I knew I was coming to the convention, somebody asked me to be of service, and now I've got service commitments up the yin-yang for the convention, because I have like a bullseye on my back. Call Bill, he'll say yes. And it's been that way ever since I was new, because that's the kind of self-support that even if I don't have a dollar to put in the basket, I can do that. I can always do that. I can always show up for somebody else. I can always talk to somebody after a meeting. It's really, really important to remember that each one of us has that kind of value, I think. And the other thing about the self-support is, if I simply ask my higher power to put me where I'm needed, I always end up in the right place as far as service is concerned. There's a bunch of stuff that I've done in service, like this right now, that when I found out what it was, I rolled my eyes. But the next thought was, you got a reason for me to be here. My higher power has a reason for me to be here now rather than doing something else. And I'm really grateful for that. I don't have to wrestle with that. I don't have to figure it out. I let somebody else lead me to where I'm supposed to be when it comes to service. and I get to be of service the way I'm supposed to be. I highly recommend on the self-support side, make yourself open to and available to service and find out how your higher power wants you to work for Narcotics Anonymous. We're not all good at everything. I don't think I would have the patience to do anything that any of the people on the program subcommittee are doing or the convention committee in general. I just don't think I have whatever it takes. But you know what? If it comes up that I'm asked to do that and I'm able to do that, I'm going to do it because I don't know. I don't know really what I'm made for. I don't know if I have the ability to do that or not. I shy away from it because it seems big and scary and difficult. But as far as self-support is concerned, if I just make myself available for service, I can support Narcotics Anonymous in the way that I'm supposed to, rather than trying to call the shots. I really don't have anything else to say. I'm really grateful to be clean today. I'm grateful to be here. And I will keep coming back because this program has given me a life that I could not have imagined. I wouldn't say a life beyond my wildest dreams because I've had some pretty wild dreams. But I didn't ever think I would be here. I don't know when I got here where I thought I would be this far along the road, but it wasn't here. And I'm so glad this is where I am. It's a wonderful life, and I'm a big fan of saying, you know what, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I'll keep coming back.
All righty, thanks, Bill. And our next speaker is Jeff. I believe he's from Baltimore, is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Bill, and I thank you, people, for being here. And I thank God for the program and just for the day. You know, the steps, traditions, and the sixth tradition, and the Narcotics Anonymous message is hope. And I understand today that a lot of time, it took me a long time to understand how important it is for me to realize that, the steps and the tradition and the concept, and look, my house and my children, my grandkids, and my daughter, a gangster boyfriend, and my son, gangster girlfriend, and them goddamn baby kids, and all that shit, comes with Narcotics Anonymous just for the day. You know, because it talks about it, our messes. And, the messes come from the fifth tradition. And it said, what is our messes? The message is that any addict, the message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs. And it took me a long time to realize the power in that statement, because now I have to wake up to the power of the principle of surrender. And I woke up this morning and I surrendered because, look, I'm an addict. And I don't want to use no drug. So I'm going to get that choice straight early in the morning. I don't want to go around worrying about using drugs. And our message is that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to an addict who still suffers, because that is all we have to give. And that leads up to that sixth tradition, and it talks about an NA group are never endorsed, finance, or lend NA name to any related facility or outside lend problem of money, property, or prestige diverted from our primary purpose. And what they're talking about is the group and implying endorsements. You know, Narcotics Anonymous got its own identity today. You know, I don't know nothing about a lot of other stuff and don't want to. You know, I know, and that's very important because I want to carry a knockout anonymous message. You know, I don't want to carry a message to get you all confused. You know, I want you to understand the disease of addiction, like the literature talked to from our predecessors, Jimmy K. I know about Jimmy K sitting there waiting for the meeting to happen. I mean, he waited a long time for the meeting to happen. And he wanted to leave. But somebody said, wait one more day for the meeting to happen. And the Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because look, this is the only place where I can identify with the addiction. You know, the addiction is so powerful, it'll have me not realizing that, look, can I share a little bit? Look, I got married smoking crack. You know, it wasn't my idea to smoke crack. You know, I had a lot of homeboys, and they boy crack you. You know, back then when you got married, it was a big day. I was in a big church, and look, the homeboys bought me drugs and crack and all other kind of drugs, and I thought it was a good idea to use them before the wedding. And I'm talking about, then I heard the wedding bell, and I was high as a kite. And the preacher was saying one thing, and I was thinking about the next thing, but he was taking too long. See, I'm talking about living with the disease of addiction and getting in some spiritual institution and didn't worry about I was in that institution, but I knew that I needed another one, and it was taking too long. Look, my wife was an avia. The man said, keep her forever. And I said, that's a great idea. Because I didn't see no end to not using. And look, I use people, places, and things. So not only I use drugs, I use people, places, and things. And I understood that this disease took me to my bottom, and my bottom was smoking that crack. That crack took away my identity, and now I don't smoke no crack today. I found a new way to live when I came to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and that's been a while ago, but I still have this addiction. You know, I understand my house is a lot better because, look, I decided to work on me because I found me a home group. And now in the group today, you know, it's real complicated. I got to change some home group because I don't like what they be doing. So sometimes I have to move on because I don't want to be caught up in a lot of stuff. You know, it talks about a part of that, the home group having a certain amount of money. But nowadays, groups like a whole lot of money. You know, they carry the NA name, and in Baltimore City, it's off the chain. You know, they're having the convention next week. A home group just got started, only 2 months old, and they're having their second marathon, but this time they're having a three-day convention. And we don't even know what they did with the money with the first marathon. You know, so what happens is a lot of time, you know, I can come around here and get it mixed up, and think I can serve in a better way with a lot of money and manipulation because I got some time. And the home group I got is named Spiritual in Nature, so we don't need a lot of money. We don't need a lot of money. Because, look, the program is designed where all I got to do is put a dollar in the basket and the other members and God take care of the rest. You know, we got to concentrate on carrying the message and what we do. We got a 12-step meeting. We work all 12 steps. But instead of having people read the steps, we use the CD. So that we can deal with some patient intolerance and early on some listen and listen to the step. When you listen to the step, you hear some stuff. And in the newcomers, sometimes I believe and my group believe that they might not hear something. So it's always easy to hear loud, but why not it's good to hear the truth? So that's what we do at our home group. So we don't have a lot of outside organizations coming to see us, but they want Narcotics Anonymous in Baltimore City. We got a lot of big organizations coming in, want to take over them home group. We got a meeting that start early in the morning. The next day, if you go there at 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't see a secretary, you don't see a home, you don't see nothing, you don't see nobody, but there's a meeting there. And that's what they're talking about, you know, taking the group and the group signing off to a bigger thing so the bigger thing can make a lot of money, but they're using NA name. And then you have NA members that's part of the group, now they dictate the home group. Look, in this thing, in this place where the home groups move to, they lose their identity because, look, you can't drink coffee in the building. So somebody said, you know, NA members don't need no coffee. You know, that's not part of the literature. That's not part of the program. But what I'm saying is all the meetings is the same. So the meeting don't become the home group meeting. The meeting become the building groups. Because you got to do with the people in charge of the building and reading why they do it. Because they want to subsidize and get the grant money. And then once they get the money, they need an NA meeting because they found out the NA worked. So now we got all these recovery programs. They're taking over that. So now they want to say that when you come in a group, you can get a little sip, a little methadone, buprenorphine, just a little sip, and you are you an NA member and you clean. And a lot of time the home group don't ask no questions. And we'll come in a meeting, we'll see a member that took a little sip, and he be secretary. Nobody wants to start no controversy. Nobody want to hurt no feelings. But our literature talk about, you must be clean. Staying clean must come first. So, you know, it's 2010 now. You know, you can lose your meeting because of the fact that it's got a lot to do with behavior and change. Sometimes people don't want to change. I don't know, man. You know, in Baltimore City, you know, they got these places that deal in recovery that allow people to form groups, and they say bring in public relations, and they do talk to the people, and they do explain to the people that we would like to have an NA meeting, and so they say, well, can we do this and do that? They say, yeah, and they say, well, you know, you can't violate none of our tradition. They agree with it, and the minute they allow them in, the first thing they do is get the meeting there and get the meeting started. The meeting helping a lot of people, the first thing they do is violate the traditions. And man, you can't stop them because, look, they're helping people. So we can't come in there and tell them they can't do what they do. So you have a lot of meetings that now is current, the recovery place messes instead of knockout anonymous messes. You know, we don't have no messes that deal with certain stuff for people think to deal with. You know, our predecessors, you know, fought for our identity. That's why we have identity statement. We don't care nothing about that. Because what happens is a lot of time, you know, it's real important to carry our NA messes. You know I carried a mess for a long time. You know, my father died recently, and I had to go down there to Virginia. And my father, you know, he raised me, but he was real abusive because he was from Virginia. In Virginia, they smoked them big cigars and drink that corn liquor. And he had six kids, and I was the one that looked just like him. And he used to beat the I don't know what out of me because I looked like him. And I had a lot of issues early on. I had low self-esteem. It was way before the drug. You know, I hated myself. I didn't like my mother because she married him, and that was a difficult time, and that self-centeredness was in me deep, and I understand that a lot of time when he died, I did some work and I had to forgive him, and I had to go down in Virginia and I had to feel him feelings over again. You know, I had to be that new person. I had to carry the message of the home group. Because a home group is spiritual in nature. I had to carry the message there and act like I had some sense. You think I ain't feeling no stuff from his relative? You know, like my brother, I got a brother who had a different father. And so that means my mother could be herself. And she raised him. She raised my brother with loving and caring. She said nice things about him. She made sure he went to good schools. You know, now my brother's a lawyer. And she called him distinguished. And anytime something important to talk about, she brings them in. Well, don't bring me in, I get jealous. And the same thing happened down there. You know, they said my brother came in, they said he walked like a preacher. And they said, why don't he be a preacher? So now he'd be a preacher and a lawyer. And they seen me, the only thing they say that I look like my father. You know, what kind of thing is that? You know, that's like an identity problem. You know, yeah, he looked like, but everybody kept saying that. And man, I was feeling some stuff, because look, I want to be recognized too. And I was down there real quiet, and you know, and all the people down there in the woods, and they was having these certain type of behavior, and they would ask them the distinguished question, and then they would sit around me, and they said, "Don't you know you look just like your father?" And all I could hear was, my father used to say, my father used to get so mad, and they used to blame it on me, and he used to come in, and he used to say, "That's why you, I hate your goddamn ass. That's why you the ugly one in the family. That's why you never amount to nothing. That's why you never be nothing. That's why I don't like you in my house. That's why you ain't gonna grow up. That's why you got them ugly self. That's why you got them big heels. That's why you put that Arthur skin tone cream in your head to make you look better. That's why you put that stuff on your face to make you look like Leave the Beaver. That's why you try to look like somebody else for a long time. That's why you gotta take out the trash knowing them mean boys out there and let them mean boys beat me up. Then when I came home, he beat me up for letting them beat me up. That's why I never be nothing in life. That's why I'm the ugliest one in the family. Get a gun and kill yourself." You know, all that stuff was down there, and I still had to work the program. You know, because coming into a meeting conducive to recovery and realizing and hearing who I am, I'm an addict. You know, it's about the drugs, and it ain't about what kind of drugs. I use all type of drugs. You know, the first step talk about justification, rational. I will still do that today. You know, I thought I had a thing on this, and I found out, and it talks about more. And I found out I was addicted to more. Because I used to have all kinds of drugs, cigarettes, gambling. Y'all said I had lust. And I listened to y'all's story, so all y'all exciting story applied to me. Y'all told me what it feel good and what it should feel like. Y'all said to take the edge on me and all that kind of stuff. And I found out it never was lust, it was just my thinking. You know, so in that sixth tradition is real important because a lot of times, you know, we'll think the group is for to do have these big events and be the most popular group and have all this money and stuff, but really it's there for the suffering addict. You know, like I went to the meeting this morning, right? Got up early in the morning. The meeting was fantastic, but the end of the meeting, as soon as the dude finished sharing, the chaos broke up. You know, people started moving chairs, picking up stuff, moving around. It's like they told me that the prayer from the beginning and the end is real important for the newcomer. And they didn't do that. And then they had a dude moving equipment while we was in the circle saying the prayer. And the dude was moving equipment was an addict. So this thing can let you know that you're an addict, but if you're doing a job, you need to do the job because the prayer ain't important no more because you need to do what you need to do, but the prayer's important. I'm telling you. So if the newcomer don't get a meeting conducive to recovery, I'm talking about a whole meeting. I ain't talking about where when I came around, we used to get about 3 newcomers a week. And then treatment centers and knock-on just so good and do an excellent job with public relations. And they do a job with talking to other organizations. And what happened is they start bringing 15 people at one time. Can you imagine having your home group? Next thing you know, you got 15 foreigners, and you don't know who they are, and they come in your group. And then if your group is 75 minutes, but on an hour, they got to leave. And so then the same 25 minutes get up and leave in the middle of the meeting. Now the meeting is not conducive to recovery for the whole meeting. Now you got a brand new meeting. And it's so important to understand that for me, and I'm talking about for me, that prayer, the prayer, I need that prayer because it talk about self-sufficient and they talk about supporting, but money, I'm never going to have enough money. And money ain't going to do the things that I need to do to deal with this disease of addiction that only make the disease worse. Because the more money I have, the more things I buy to make the defects come out. I can't hold them in if I'm bringing them out. I don't have a problem with lust when I got with no money. You know, God will meet you at your knees. He'll take all your money from you. You ain't got to worry about tricking. You can walk around, act like you're tricking, but soon I seen a date and say, like, you know, "Can we go? But I ain't got no money." You know, nowadays she might hit me in the head with a bottle. You know, because a lot of time that sixth tradition, when it talks about, because it goes into the seventh tradition, where it talks about fully self-supporting, kind of outside contribution, because a lot of time the group might decide to have a function, and like I said, they're going to have a 3-day marathon, a new group, just came in like January. Because what happened, a senior members will come and have an idea, and they might know somebody who have a business and a building. So you know, they'll get, you know, tapped off, so they'll take the meeting. And if you don't go through the right structure to get a meeting, you can just get a meeting online, or you can just get a meeting because they'll send you the literature and they'll send you a book, a starter kit. So you really don't need the people down the service center to get a meeting. And all you need is a name. Now you got a meeting, and then all of a sudden you have a marathon, but ain't nobody put no dollars in the basket. So how you gonna have a big convention type marathon with no money that's coming from the basket? But a lot of times, some people think that they know how to get these speakers, they get these out-of-town speakers, and they think that's how it messes. So when you do that, you might have a good event, but still, you don't understand that the second tradition talking about ultimate authority. So, you know, doing all that kind of stuff, putting all them speakers together, don't make the message real clear. Because, you know, for a home group, you know, we put the dollar in the basket, right? And we need to have are fair to raise money, we can just go to the area and special events and ask them to help us out, or we can let other home group members, or they say some of us who got extra money to put $2 in the basket. You're not limited to putting $1 to the basket. But they say don't put like 50, because what happens is then I become a real popular person in that meeting, and then it become my meeting. Because you ain't going to tell me too much when I put that $50 in there. Because now the $50 is going to give me control. And if I've been around with some time, the newcomer is going to look up to me for the wrong reason. And now he don't think his dollars are important. So I might have an idea that we need a new coffee pot, but not a regular coffee pot. A coffee pot with flashing, I'm dying to hit six-cylinder of different brands of coffee at one time. It cost $350. It would be the best coffee pot in Narcotics Anonymous, and we can do it. Because, look, we in competition on the outside stuff. Not that the meeting is all right, because a lot of time the meeting is designed for us to have less, not more. You know, and these places, most of them from facility that have groups, and they have all these conventions and marathon, and they don't even have literature on the table. And look, they don't even have enough money to get coffee. And then you have groups that have been here for 25 years that never even came close to running out of coffee. Look, never came close to paying their rent. Never came close to meeting the needs of the group. You know, even have a little extra, little cookies, and on a consistent basis, and you go in there, they don't allow behaviors in their group. They don't allow me outside with my trunk. You know, I got all this NA stuff on it, but I'll pop my trunk in a minute if I had something to sell. CDs and all that kind of stuff, because a lot of people don't know that takes away from the meeting. And the excuse they use is that, God made so, you know, everybody can get some help from anywhere. But our literature and the tradition talks about changing your behavior and representing a new way of living, you know, because you really don't need to do that, you know, because I understand I came in here with nothing. I had left my family and everything just to smoke some crack, and I went on tour, and they were babies. I went on tour, when I came back, they was adults that cussed, and they didn't cuss nice. I remember my son cussed back at you, and he cussed back at me. That didn't feel good. And he had said some things that he found out about my story I didn't even know he knew about. And I felt bad. And God wouldn't let me cuss back. God put glue on my jaws that I couldn't open my mouth, so I just had to feel that shit and couldn't talk. And God told me to listen to that. And I had to hear my own children getting smacked. My daughter early on, you know, she don't pick the nice boyfriend. Her boyfriend came downstairs in my house one day with no shirt on and went straight to the icebox and got a big old sandwich and a big old soda and walked past me and said, "What's up, Unc?" and went on back upstairs. And you know, I had to go through all this by going to the meeting, going to the home group, learning some stuff, and not really acting out. because I wanted to act out and say something, but I knew I had something deeper than that I ain't know how to control acting out. I knew I had something that had to deal with my past that was going to bring some resentment where I take that little teeny thing, and you remember I smoked crack out in the streets for a long time. Who ain't, if you use drugs in the street, then I seen more than enough to last me in a lifetime. And not only that, I did more than enough to last me in a lifetime. I never seen nothing I couldn't use, or nobody I couldn't use, or some stuff I used. I got identity messed up when I was out there. I didn't know who was who. All I know, if I can use you, then you was part of my program. So I got rid of all my dignity out there. So it talks about, it has some integrity. I'll tell you, when the group run on just getting substance, just to look good or be the best group, they lose integrity. When a group allows certain people to be treasured, they don't ask them no questions, or you can't ask them no questions, and he got about $400, and if you ask them a question or bring the money to group conference, because I should be able to ask a question in your group about the money, because if I go to your group and I put a dollar in the basket, that means I can ask a question. But I asked the question, they was ready to beat me up after the meeting. All I asked is, what do y'all did with all the money you had that last marathon with? And they were saying stuff like it was none of my business. I said, well, you were selling food, and then you were selling sodas, and you had about all day long thousands of people to walk through there, so you must have had a lot of money. Can I ask that? And they said it was none of my business. And what I'm saying is my recovery tells me if I make it an issue, then what happens is I lose my respect for the tradition. Because, you know, making a problem and not come with a spiritual solution is not the answer to the problem. So I can't just come anywhere in a group and see the way it is and come start talking to people and start talking about people and making them angry where we in there fighting in the group. And if y'all come in and the police come around, they're just going to see two addicts fighting. They ain't going to know what they're fighting over. And I'm going to be fighting because of the fact that they don't want to do what I'm supposed to do or the literature said do. I want them to do what I want them to do, and they ain't doing it, so I think they're violating tradition, so I'm going to be the N.A. police. And I found out you can't say anything I want to anybody in a lot of these groups nowadays, because a lot of the addicts, some of them come from prisoners, and they hit pretty hard. And I heard their story. You know, so this tradition also talks about some principles. And the principle is anonymity. And anonymity got a lot to do with what the newcomer and the message that the meeting is carrying. And if the meeting simple, if the meeting really concerned about the newcomers, if they really are comfortable at the meeting, if they really allow the opportunity to express themselves, or the meeting is dictated with senior members are using the time for them just to share, and they say that the newcomer can't share because, look, they taking up some of their time, so if they're going to have a day for the newcomer to express some of them, because they're going to go on that old stuff where when I came around, they say, take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth and shut the fuck up, 2010. And they got whole new drugs, whole new experience, and it didn't work back then because a lot of people back then might have clean time, but guess what? A lot of them don't go to meetings no more. So how can you carry on a tradition if you're not showing up in 2010? How can you have the meetings following tradition if you got new people coming in the meeting doing the best they can on what they know, and even though they ain't following tradition, they still, it's an NA meeting, the meeting still must go on, the doors must be open, but if I'm not there to help educate or be there for somebody else to carry the message to keep me clean, then I need to keep my mouth closed. Because I can come in and call damage. That's like I was talking about that facility. Even though that facility there, when public relations came to that facility, they say it still was doing a lot of good stuff for the community, for the addicts. It's too late, even though they was violating some things. But how can you stop? They had no way to stop it. Because what happens is when a thing get to a certain point, they could do more harm because they would start addressing about 500 addicts a day, with them meetings going on from 9 in the morning. So they was really helping a lot of people. So once, if you don't, when you sit down and you negotiate and you don't stick to the guidelines and our traditions of the group and let people know and what you ain't going to tolerate, you can't sit back and let them grow to be a real supported organization under the name of NA, because ain't nothing you're going to be able to do about it. Because you can come and cause more harm because the newer member don't know the difference between structure, conducive, or a lot of stuff. All they know is an NA meeting and they need to arrest this disease of addiction, because it's hard for an addict to recover if they have nowhere to go. And not only that, the places are sending them here. The jails are sending them here. So what I'm saying is that my responsibility is to look at me and see what I'm doing to help the situation instead of to harm the situation. Because part of me, support me, is to come to the meeting and tell the truth, because I have a job, but my job just don't pay enough. But I know when I come here and I do what my steps tell me to do, when I be grateful what God give me today, because I don't need a whole lot to feel good anymore. You know, I thought I need a lot of outside stuff to feel good, but I don't need a lot. I don't need a lot of sex and all that kind of stuff, a lot of money. I don't need a brand new car, a brand new house, a new family. I got the perfect kid, you know, because I found out, I learned how to keep the focus on me and keep working on me and looking the good at them, not the bad in them. And when I changed, they changed, because my son was there to bring me money over for me to go to convention, and he was there early in the morning to make sure I got that money. That relationship had changed. It was early on when I came back from smoking the crack and trying to be a father. Why? Because I learned how to apply the tradition that I learned from the group and bring it home. You know, self-supporting is that I can take care of my family without really me. You know, because the money never solved the problem. It's the spiritual principle of accepting, and that spiritual principle of anonymity. And look, integrity is that, you know, I'm out here at the convention. I got a nice hotel and everything. And I'm all right with it. I got a big room all by myself. Look, I ain't look for no treats or nothing. I ain't look nothing to enhance me here. You know why? Because I have grown. I know that a lot of stuff that I thought was good for me ain't good for me. You know, I'm all right by myself because I'm not by myself. Look, I need the peace because I don't want a stranger in my room anyway talking, because I don't like to hear people talking after 5 minutes. And I don't like nobody violating my space. And not only that, the couple dollars I got, I want to hold on to and buy what I want them to buy. Because, you know, it's nothing free. You know, I thought drugs was free. The first one I got was free. And it took me all them years to find out that it wasn't even free. I'm talking about coming here and understanding that you know, the faith is how powerful disease is, we got some steps that come with a higher power that's way powerful than that. You know, I'm talking about, I don't care what situation you think you in a better situation sitting at this meeting. You know, because, you know, that first step is so powerful. If you stop and think about what you really have from where you came from and the positive stuff you can do without a lot of stuff from the outside. I'm talking about the power of feeling good, the power to know that you got a whole lot going on, the power to know that the bills and all that is already taken care of, already in place, the power that, look, you woke up this morning, you can feel the rain, you can feel the fresh air, you can smell the coffee, look, you can talk to your kids like you got some integrity. Look, you ain't got to be all in their business trying to change them, thinking that they worse off than I was when I was at that age. Look, I ain't got to say nothing bad to them because, look, I don't want to surrender and feel the goodness that God trying to have me to feel, because look, I don't want to feel it because I want to hold on to that control issue. You know, it ain't right. I don't have enough. I don't have enough, so I need to feel bad. So now I need to look off to somebody else and start something with them, because look, I'm really angry at myself because I ain't grateful. I don't have no faith. I say I have faith, but I don't understand that the less substance, money is a substance, sex is a substance too, but sometimes sex, I get that all twisted up. You know, because look, I'm 58 years old, and they got some commercials on TV to talk about that I still can be that dude. And look, they have these pretty girls, they come on at 3 o'clock in the morning, and all of them be talking to me. And they be telling me, you know, you may be 58, but you a handsome somebody. And look, they say, look, if you think you can't do what you think you can do, well, we got some stuff that can help you do what you want to do. They say it can make it bigger, larger, and I can go 4 hours. But they say if you're 58 and you go 4 hours, you better have your doctor number next to you and call your doctor. So look, they have dreams for me, even though I'm not in the dream, but I'm saying the disease of addiction never quit. Look. And they say, look, I can get illegal stuff from my doctor through the insurance, but I don't even pay for it. Because look, it said that I need one in order to enhance my relationship, but it ain't say who. It's just going to enhance it. Can you imagine walking around with Viagra without a date? Well, what happened, Viagra started talking to you saying, like, look, you got to do something about that problem. You ever see that commercial where the dude had that problem? They said, man, you better do something about that problem. Just come in and sit in my office. Where the disease of addiction said, you got to do something about that, and I'll help you. So I understand how powerful that fantasy thing and how that thinking is, because what happens is, if I don't have groups and I don't have you people and I don't have conducive to recovery places to let this out and to free myself, then that lure thought will turn into a fixed idea and it turn into compulsion and obsession. Then all I do now is I'm feeling that I need to feel something, and I need to feel it right away, and I need to do this now. And even though I might be trying to be honest, but I'm going to start saving money. I'm going to have money in here and money in there just in case. You know, that just in case if the family don't act right, just in case if I get in an argument with my son or my daughter, just in case I get an argument with you where you stick a knife in me or find out one of my character defects and you make me feel real bad, then I can escape. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, that's why the room and the meeting must be conducive to recovery and talk about the addictions. Because we're not talking about the drug. The drugs is a symptom of our problem, but the addiction will manifest, and they got people with time or the newcomer. It doesn't make no difference. You know, this addiction will tell me that if I got a whole lot, I don't have this disease no more. And it had me not being grateful. Look, I'll buy a new pair of Nike boots black. It'll say the black ones ain't good enough. You need the brown and the blue ones, because what happens is you can get some jeans to match all three of them and a brand new jacket. And it had me spending my money buying stuff I don't want. You know, sometimes I used to wake up in the middle of the night and hear the thing say, Foreman Mills. And look, I wake up thinking about what time it opened. I just heard one sound. You know, this disease will come to me physical too. And that's a mind blower. And that's why I'm glad I go to a lot of visit many meetings, because what happens is the physical thing will tell me that I need something to get rid of the pain. It won't tell me that I'm causing the pain. It'll say I need a solution to get rid of the pain. You know, the pain caused from the character defect, lying, cheating, manipulating, just off the hook, you know, using people, places, and things clean, you know, wanting more, you know, not feeling good, not relaxing, get one job, get two jobs, working overtime, and when you like that, you got a lot of money, you shine, you're driving in a brand new car, and you come to meet and people think you working this program. But I'm doing everything in the world to get more and never satisfied. So the disease of addiction is manifesting in me. Even though I did the work, it still had me using without my permission clean. And then what happened is going to affect the physical side called stress. You know, everything I did in that addiction, I got some diseases that I don't have that can show up any minute now without my permission. Because what happened is I'll be doing the stuff that a lot will cause cancer. Because what happens is a lot of time in recovery, I won't hear because I ain't listening to me and I'm caught up in a lot of stuff that look, the truth will set you free. Like, look, if I surrender, like I surrender with the drugs, then my life will get better. I won't even hear that the disease is physical, you know, because my disease will tell me it's not physical. You're doing all right. You know, lost a little weight. You know, you got that nice shirt on. You know a lot of literature. You all right. You do it. You don't need to take care of yourself. You don't need to tell the truth. Just keep on lying and get more and satisfy and people please everybody. Because once I people please and get a lot of money, you know, they gonna treat me like I'm some type of hero. But the minute the money stopped, then everybody gonna start looking at me funny. I remember I had two jobs. I quit a job. First thing my family did said, "Why you do that?" They didn't care nothing about I had an illness or nothing. They want to know why I did that. Can't you go to the doctor and still keep two jobs? You know, long as you keep that two jobs, can't you wait till you get on your deathbed? But keep the jobs anyway? So I understand that the stuff will tell me make changes in different areas because it's not when I got here, it's 2010. So today I surrender in a lot of areas. God do a pretty good job. You know, because I found out in a minute, and going to the step meeting, it said, let go and let God. It said, would I need more of something anyway, and I got just as much in front of me, and ain't doing nothing with that. How can I love myself if I always want to use stuff that's going to take me away from the love that caused me harm? You know, I'm going to ask for more money and then not write on paper what I'm going to do with the money. You know why I need so much of outside stuff anyway, and inside I got some stuff going on called joy. You know, I can be happy like this and have some power. You know, because what I found out that I'm in a room sharing a message of hope about the groups and Narcotics Anonymous, about how if the groups go off course and start chasing the stuff that came that I use anyway that got me here, then I do the same thing. So I have to go to the meetings that's conducive to recovery, but I still visit the other meetings. But when I go to the other meetings, I come and listen to the message, and I pray. And I ask God to give me the ability to talk to people, and I pull them up outside, and I talk about these kind of things. I don't pull them up in the meeting. I don't cross-share on nobody and try to hurt them like that, because that's not solving the problem. I can pull up and talk to them about some things. That's what I was taught in Narcotics Anonymous. So in closing, I just want to say, that both traditions put together, it give us this word called freedom. And you know when you're free. And if you're not working those steps and don't have no sponsor and not participating in your recovery and not doing no service work, and you can start today. Because freedom and the gift of recovery is given to me and us when we wake up in the morning. You don't have to worry about your recovery yesterday. You can start your recovery right now and receive some of that freedom, because that freedom is awesome. Thank God I ain't caught on that illusion, chasing and running and all that kind of stuff. Thank God for what God had done for me, that I don't need a lot of stuff to make me feel good. I know how to go through the pain, because that stuff don't make me feel good anyway. Don't get rid of the pain. It's only a temporary solution. Why not use a long-term solution? That is the 12-step, 12-traditional concept, and you people. I keep coming back.